Tree fruits are starting to ripen around the region. If the ones in your area look like the fruits in mine, they look a little lean and hard from the drought. And at least one irrigation district, Talent Irrigation District, shut off water this week, ending its season before water users are done growing things. That's the overall backdrop for our weekly gardening chat. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who now joins us weekly through the growing season to field our many questions on successful gardening. Lynn, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start actually with the native plant sale because we talked about it last time and it is still off in the future, but not much of the future.
This Saturday from 9 to 3 out at the extension on Hanley Road, 569 Hanley Road in Central Point. Yep, I've got a crew out here right now cleaning up pots and getting things labeled.
Okay, so and how big a variety of stuff at that native plant sale?
I probably have 25 to 30 different species of plants that are for sale. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And again, this is not Hanley Farms. If you go into Hanley Farm, you're in the wrong driveway.
Right.
Go back out to the road, back out to Hanley Road and try again.
Yeah, if you're heading toward Jacksonville, it's the second driveway at the extension. So you pull into you could pull into either and then walk over from the research center. But we're out in the big parking lot outside the extension building itself.
Okay. Yeah. And that is Saturday, July 24th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, remember from an earlier visit, it's not like you can really populate a food garden the way we think of it now with native plants. There aren't just not a lot of things that we think of in terms of, juicy, fruity kinds of things.
Right. You know. Service berries would probably be the most, amenable to some kind of ornamental garden that you could then go and forage those berries. They're not a really flavorful berry. They have a cool kind of almondy seed taste. Their seed is a little almondy, but they taste kind of, they're not as rich as a blueberry. Most people prefer blueberries.
Mm-hmm. Are they sort of in the same family or genus or something?
They are not. Service berries are in the rose family. We do have a native huckleberry that if people have a shaded and kind of damp area, our native huckleberries are a beautiful evergreen shrub, slow growing, but they have delicious little berries that are even more intense in flavor because they're small. But yeah, for huckleberry pie and huckleberry jam, they are incredible. And they're a lovely shrub. They're a really pretty shrub.
And do they have a short ripen window or something?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of the same as blueberries. Mm-hmm. They tend to bloom over time and then have a fruiting thing that kind of extends over time like blueberries do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My laugh a minute ago was a laugh of frustration. 36 years I lived in the Rogue Valley. I have yet to get a piece of huckleberry pie from that place in Union Creek. It's always out when I get there.
Well, if you're going out and foraging it in the wild, it's time consuming because they are very tiny fruit.
Uh-huh.
And, it takes a lot to get enough huckleberries to make a pie.
Okay. All right. That explains why they run out so fast. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So in terms of native plants, and I already have a question for you from somebody about that, I'll get to in a moment, but it begs me to ask the question about if even some of the drought tolerant stuff that we're getting used to seeing around here, things like foxtails and star thistles and the things that grow up in a yard that hasn't been watered over the course of a summer, are even these native to the region?
Star thistles definitely are not. Most of the annual grasses that you see are not.
Hmm.
They came in on the fur of cattle when the Spanish came into California, and they've spread horrifically across all of the western states. Dropping out of the fur of cattle and then out competing native plants. But they are annuals. They die back in the summer but they seed prolifically. And then they come up earlier in the year than some of the natives. So.
Oh, I had not realized that fur of cattle was one of the one of the transmission media.
Absolutely. The reason that California turns golden now in the summer instead of saying green is because it's been overtaken by annual grasses. And it used to be all bunch grass. There were no annual grasses in North America. They were all perennial bunch grasses, and so those annuals that cover California and most of the western states are imports.
Oh, wow. Okay, so very different landscape from what was here hundreds of years
really
ago.
Really different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Kunzman, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. She's from Jackson County Master Gardeners, answering our questions patiently about gardening matters. And so there is no question too dumb, which I like to say a lot because I ask most of the questions, and I'm really hoping I'm not like totally into no brain land. Join us with your question at 800-838-3760 by phone, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Michelle dropped this question off a couple minutes ago by phone to say she's in Winston in Douglas County. Backyard was previously pasture, she says, and she's wanting to change to native landscape. Is an organization in the county they can collaborate with to help them pick the best native plants for their land?
Oh, in Doug County?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, her native plant society, there should be one in the county. Mm-hmm. And so she could just Google Douglas Native Plant Society, and those people could put her in touch with folks who could help out. Also, she could just go to OregonFlora.org and put in the parameters of her field. You know, it's sunny, it's mm-hmm. dry, it's whatever, and that she wants ground cover or grasses or something, and it will come up with a bunch of plants that she can choose from to put out there.
Well, mm-hmm. And then that's another question then. I mean, how dependent? I mean, different plots, different plants, certainly.
Absolutely. So if you have a northern side of your house that gets more shade, you're gonna select different plants than the ones that are gonna go on the south, where you're getting just baking sun and reflected heat off the surface of your house. You know, depending on the exposure and the amount of water that you are either able or willing to put on those plants, really kind of dictates what plant should go where. Plus, how tall a plant do you want? Do you want it low growing next to your house, so if it catches fire, it's not going to catch your house on fire? Mm-hmm. Or do you want it high growing out under some trees away from your house to make like a woodland? It depends on what the purpose is you're going to use the plant, which plant you choose.
All right. But you could do some stair-stepping, it sounds like. Keep the low stuff close to the house and the taller things.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, for fire-wise stuff, we tell people, keep the vegetation low around your house. And then, put your woodland plants under your trees out away from your house, where they're not going to scorch the siding and get the eaves burning. You know?
Right. All kinds of things to think about it. Michelle know that I was looking here. There is an Umpqua Valley chapter of the Native Plant Society of Oregon.
Perfect.
I don't see a clear phone number there because it's got a couple of personal ones. I can direct them to the Master Gardeners for Douglas County.
And the Master Gardeners at the Extension Service. The other website I would recommend is the National Wildlife Federation. Mm-hmm. It's called, you just go Plant Finder, Native Plant Finder. You mm-hmm. Google it that way, and it will come up with that site, and she can put in her zip code, and it will give her a list of plants that are appropriate for her area.
Okay. I will make sure that we provide a link to that one at the website for
Native
today.
Native Plant Finder, yeah.
Yep.
I think I sent it to you a long time ago, but maybe not.
Probably, but, you know, I got piles of stuff from you. Have to thin the herd every so often.
I believe in inundation, you know.
I believe you. I'm totally up with that, yeah. So let me give another number here then, because the main office for Douglas County Extension that can refer Michelle to Master Gardeners is 541-672-4461. You got that pencil, Michelle? 541-672-4461. And I'll, again, put the Native Plant Finder up on the website as
and
well.
And also, if she goes to Oregon Extension Catalog, if she Googles that, mm-hmm. There are all kinds of free downloadable PDFs about native plants and landscaping for pollinators and all that kind of stuff. So she can search on that website.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff there, too. So I was asking last week about the round leaf stuff that was showing up in my garden that I hadn't mm-hmm. yet gotten to yank out. The suspicion was geraniums. And then I talked to a landscaper friend, and he said, probably mallow. And, mm-hmm. and that's what it turned out to be once I looked at the pictures.
Right. Yes. Yes. That sounds better to me.
And what do you know about these? I don't know. I'm just amazed at the different things that show up. You know, hi, I'm here.
Yeah, actually, mallows are, we have some native mallows that are great host plants for some of our native butterflies and moths. You know, it's just a different family of plants, and it has different characteristics for its flowers and fruit. And so that's how we identify our plants. But yeah, those particular ones that grow in your garden have quite a healthy taproot, and they can get established and then get hard to yank. Mm-hmm. And they like to feed around.
Yes. And I noticed, yeah, I was warned about the taproot. And sure enough, when I pulled some of them up, they were getting around 4 inches long or so.
You got to get the whole thing out.
Yeah, I got them right after watering. So they were a little easier to deal with. Yes. So that begs the question, at least in my mind, is there any weed or plant that shows up uninvited that is at least neutral to the other plants? It won't necessarily crowd them out or suck up too many nutrients or anything like that?
Well, I don't know if neutral is. I mean, there are some that show up in your garden that are edible, like purslane, which is a nice thing to throw in your salads when you weed it out. But anything that's growing in the soil around plants that you desire is going to, you know, take its share of nutrients out of the soil, and that means they're not available for the plant you want. So it really is a good idea to keep things weeded around the plants that you want to be growing the strongest and the fastest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm looking at purslane. It's interesting. It's also called pigweed, little hogweed, fatweed.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of a succulenty kind of leaf, mm-hmm. kind of a juicy leaf. And it's really good. It's got a lemony taste, and it's good to throw in salads. You know, some people get miner's lettuce growing in their yard, and that's nice. Wirtulaca, that's great.
Yeah, we actually got a salad of miner's lettuce, one salad's
right.
worth this year.
It's very tasty. So sometimes the weeds can be your friend.
Well, and that was what I was driving at with the question. It wasn't an excuse for not weeding. It was just wondering if there's any much symbiosis in the gardening world, plants that do provide some benefits to each other, or at least don't cause any harm, don't act like parasites.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you have native peas growing or something, they provide nitrogen because their roots seek nitrogen, but they're also climbers and scramblers, and they just overwhelm anything you're trying to grow. So I don't know. And our native clovers are not usually found in gardens. There's a little native ground cover that's quite beautiful. It's a little mint, member of the mint family. It's called Prunella vulgaris, and self-heal is the common name. And it is actually a nice little plant if you want to kind of replace parts of your lawn, mm-hmm. because you can just let it spread around. It's low growing. It puts up like a 4-inch flower shoot that the bees love. And it's a kind of a pretty little thing. If you're willing to have an area that where you want to be able to walk, that you don't mind not looking like lawn.
Right.
It's kind of a cool little guy.
Yeah, yeah, it is pretty. I've been looking at the pictures of Prunella vulgaris.
Yeah, it's a really lovely little ground cover. It's people plant ajuga and those kinds of things in their garden beds, but why not plant Prunella? It's a host plant. It's a nectar plant. It's native. It's got deep roots and very, very tough and drought tolerant. So, it's a good little guy.
There's another thing though, isn't there? There's another sort of purpley flower that's part of the dandelion family that I think we talked about earlier. Not ringing a bell.
No, about that. There's salsify, which is a non-native that has a yellow or a purple flower. It comes up with a big stalk, and it's got a deep tap root that apparently is edible. I've never eaten one. I just yank them out when they get in my yard. But I don't know of another purple dandelion. There are native asters that we have that will also spread around, but they're not ground cover type plants. They're just they can be garden thugs. They can take over in an optimum area. They'll just spread everywhere. And they're tall. They get like 2 to 3 feet tall. So they're not like, you know, they're not low growing like dandelions.
No. Wow. 2 to 3 feet. Yikes.
Yeah.
Lynn Kunstman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange once again for our weekly gardening chat. She's with Jackson County Master Gardeners. You can join the conversation on the exchange. I have to admit we got so tied up in the last answers. We didn't notice the phone ring. So I'm sorry that we missed one call. Come on back at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send an email to jx@ info@jeffnet.org. So in addition to supervising what's going on with the Master Gardener plant sale coming up, how are things going in your garden? Are you getting, is this time for bugs, or are they avoiding the heat too?
It's just, the squash bugs are, we're spraying neem oil on our squash almost every other day because the squash bugs are so horrific.
Wow.
It's just an awful, they're an awful thing. So I'm going to do a little experiment and see if they are edible by chickens. The chickens will even eat them. I doubt they will. They're just so disgusting. Anyway, that's my big problem. And the weeds. I haven't had time in my garden because I've been out here at Extension working most of the week.
Yeah. And so what is it that makes the squash bugs so so disgusting?
Well, I mean, aside from the plant, the fact that they just destroy the squash plant, they mm-hmm. They really will just kill it because they feed so voraciously, vociferously. They stink. When you crush them, they have this horrible smell. So, and they just crawl. They crawl at all stages. They eat the plant, and they're little infants all the way up to mating adults all over your. It's gross.
So, once again, the bucket of soapy water for handling by
hand. But, you know, we've just gone to the nuclear option of neem oil, you know, which we go out and my husband goes out after dusk when the bees aren't flying and he just sprays the interior of the plant, you know, and it kills them.
And so he's a naturally occurring pesticide. So this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned the stink. They look like stink bugs. Are squash bugs part of the stink bug family?
You know, I don't know. I would have to look that up. That's something I would have to research.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They're not classified as stink bugs. I don't know what exactly they are.
Okay. Yeah, they're different genuses. I see the squash bug is Anasa and the stink bug is Euschistus.
They're just the creepiest things. They're awful. They're horrible. I know people who won't grow squash because of the squash bug issues here in the valley. So,
wow.
Yeah. Keep on top of them.
Okay. I'm trying not to give you nightmares here. Let's move on to a subject that's happier for Lynn and take a phone call from Ryan in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Morning.
Hi.
Were you guys talking about coyote mint?
Coyote mint. Coyote mint is a nice low-growing...
With the purple flowers and stuff.
Purple flowers.
The reason I ask is my wife and I bought a piece of land up here in Redding about 6 years ago. It's about 3 acres. And we just started deforesting some of it so we can decide where to put a house. And I found this one little plant, this one little tiny plant. It's about probably 6 inches around, but it has the most amazing mint smell I've ever had. And I would like to know how I can propagate that, how I can care for it, how I can collect the seeds and grow more.
Right.
What's the secret?
So I would not dig that plant if you can possibly avoid it. I would gather the seeds in, you know, once those seed pods dry, make sure you get out there and get those into a paper bag. And then you're going to put them into low trays of potting soil. Make sure I would use bagged soil so you're not getting weeds in with your mint seeds. And put those trays out for the winter under a screen, something where the animals can't get into it, and leave them out where they get exposed to the rain and cold. And probably in January, you're going to see little tiny plants coming up all over that. And those are the little coyote mint. And you just then you divide them into individual pots, and you can then rear them up and put them out.
Okay, so they need to go through that whole process of, was it scarifying?
Yeah. Yep. They have to be stratified.
Okay.
It's called stratification.
All right. So thanks for the call on that, Ryan, and best of luck with that. Monardella villosa, I think, is what we're talking about here, coyote mint.
Or I don't know if they have. We have odoratissima here in the valley.
Apparently there's a subspecies in Oregon.
Different species around the states.
So, Ryan, good luck on collecting the seeds and getting them ready for planting for next year. Here's another call from Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I am calling about the squash bugs, and I was just curious if you water overhead, if that's a given, first of all.
We do not. We sometimes my husband does, and then the bugs will just run down because they're up in the plant and they don't like the water. But We irrigate through a drip system through a weepy hose.
So I wonder, have you tried applying the diatomaceous earth in a I don't know if you have one of those things that blows the diatomaceous earth on in a real fine. It just spreads it nice, as you probably know, that if you try to spread it by hand, it doesn't spread very well.
Yeah, a duster, if you have a duster that you can use and blow it into the plant.
Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have not, and that's actually a good idea. Be sure, if you're using diatomaceous earth, you're wearing a good protective mask, because that's just silica that's going to cut your lungs the way it cuts the bodies, the exoskeletons of bugs.
Well, and that is the way the diatomaceous earth works, right? I mean, it basically grinds the bugs.
Diatoms have a silicon exoskeleton or skeletal structure, and so it's like very, very, very fine glass, and the bugs walk across it, and it slices them up, and when you inhale it, it slices up your lungs.
Okay.
So be careful.
Yeah, all right. So be really good. And thanks for that, Peter, for getting into that. And,
yeah, it's a great idea. Yeah.
Oh wow! So is are things coming up for? I mean, are you pulling things out of your garden now? Are things coming ripe?
Yeah, I mean, we've got all kinds of things we're harvesting now: eggplant and berries and tomatoes and tomatillos, squash, zucchini, like crazy. Mm-hmm. So all of that stuff is coming now. So it's time to start preserving that and drying it, dehydrating it, whatever it is people do to use all that stuff that comes up. And I just, like this morning, I planted another hill of zucchini because the zucchini vine that we have will be decadent in another month, and we'll want more zucchini into October to make zucchini salsa once the peppers are ready. And so we always plant a second hill of zucchini in July, even though we're buried in it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. You know, who needs to grow zucchini? Just put a box in front of your house that says zucchini wanted.
Give me your zucchini. People are hurling it at each other as they drive down the road.
Yeah, drive-by zucchini we've talked about before and probably will again. Lynn Kunzman joins us once a week to share gardening advice. She's with Jackson County Master Gardeners. Plant sale on Saturday, July 24th, 9 to 3. Lynn, thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. That's the Jefferson Exchange for this hour.